better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out
door. Come over here, kid. What is up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. How are you doing this evening? Another beautiful day in Sonoma County. The farmer's market in Sebastopol was wonderful. Mallow, all of those late summer, early fall things are still there. Lots of tomatoes from the patch in Sonoma. So I bought myself another week. I don't have to prepare my tomatoes for freezing until next week. Now, I'm going to do something a little out of the ordinary before I introduce my guests. And I just feel like, you know, I'll sleep better tonight if I do this. You may or may not know that we're coming up in 2 days on the anniversary of Jonestown. And there's a couple of very, very good documentaries that are airing on both CNN and MSNBC television. If you don't know much about Jonestown, if you're sketchy on the details, you really should take a look. It's one of those really tragic eras in our country, something that I just think we should know about, partly or maybe primarily to know that, yeah, something like that can happen. So I think it's good to keep that information alive. There were a lot of people in the North Bay involved. I have a very dear friend whose brother was one of the people who died there with Jim Jones. So check it out. It's good to keep it in mind, I think. But that's not what we're talking about tonight on Mouthful. We are talking about pressure cookers. I remember pressure cookers from my childhood when I wasn't allowed to go into the kitchen when my mother was using one. I would sort of stand at the door and she would be very nervous. And I still remember the feel of this implement that she had to put on top of the pressure cooker. It was very heavy. And when things were cooked and it was time to release the pressure, she got this long fork, like probably a carving fork, and she would put it under this implement, and it would start sounding like a steam engine going off. It's like, get out of here. Don't come near. It's dangerous. And I always thought this pot was going to explode. Pressure cookers have gotten a lot better since then. I was got interested in them. Louise McCoy, who's one of our guests, will probably know about when, because I started talking to her about it and about their safety. I was kind of afraid to bring one in my house because of what I had watched with my mother, but I was assured they're very different now, and they are. I've been cooking with one for about, 5 or 6 years, and I really like the results I get. But we also have someone with us tonight who's much more experienced on the pressure cooker than I am, and that is Jill Newsonell. You often see her at farmers markets around the county. She often goes by the Veggie Queen, I think it is, and has the Veggie Queen cookbook out and about in Sonoma County. So both of you, welcome to Mouthful.
Thank you.
Pressure cookers. Are they making a comeback, or am I just like doing that whole thing of illusion of central position? Since I noticed them, I think they're making a comeback.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say it was really a big comeback, but they are, in terms of people who are concerned about conserving energy and things like that, they're a wonderful device to cut down on cooking time, and we certainly do sell them.
Now, I always resisted the microwave. In fact, I'm microwave illiterate. I don't really like how food behaves in a microwave. But a pressure cooker, if I'm understanding it correctly, sort of mimics what it would be like if you were living under the ocean, where there's greater atmospheric pressure. So you're not doing something to food that couldn't be done somewhere, you know.
Oh, I think that's a good metaphor.
Yeah, that's how I've always thought of it. Yeah. And I know that certain things, beans, for example, dried beans, the results are extraordinary.
Wonderful, yeah, and quick.
Quick, yeah. But they also, the result is this creaminess. Do you agree, Jill?
I think it's amazing what happens with beans. And I also think because it's so fast that people will actually eat them because they don't have to wait so long and they don't have to come from a can. Yeah, I mean, the bean soup, I actually made a soup in a class. It was a cannellini bean soup that had pear in it. And I made it in a pressure cooking class, and I brought it home. And my husband's not a great fan of bean soups, but he tasted it. He was like, wow, that's great. The next night, I made it in my junior college class, and we just cooked it on top of the stove. And it took four times as long, maybe more, and it was nowhere near as good.
Yeah. I was first reintroduced to pressure cookers. I was visiting Deborah Madison when she was still living in Santa Fe. And she was having some women from one of the food organizations there. It might have just been the board of directors for the farmers market that she was heavily involved with. And we'd plan the menu, and we were going to have, can't remember now exactly what kind of bean. But at one point she says, oh, my God, I forgot the beans.
Oh, dear.
And she said, oh, well, no matter. We'll just cook them in a pressure cooker. And she cooked them for 15 minutes. She tasted them. She says, oh, they need 5 minutes more. She cooked them for 5 minutes more, took them out, stirred it, and there was just beans, water, and salt. Stirred in a tablespoon or so of creme fraiche. They were the best beans I'd ever eaten, and that was when I came back and got really interested in getting a pressure cooker.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I think, you know, whenever I open the pressure cooker when I've made something, I mean, carrots especially, when I open it and look at the color of the carrots, I am always amazed. I'm like, wow, they look so good. But the beans, people are just blown away that they can cook beans in such a short time. Because most people don't cook them just because they know it's going to take a long time.
Yeah, it's going to take you, you know, you got to remember to soak them overnight.
Right.
And then it's going to take you an hour to cook them.
Yeah.
But I also like pressure cookers for risottos.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Risotto with asparagus is one of my favorites.
So,
or winter squash.
What about
no
that
stirring? No stirring.
How do you get the creaminess?
Well, you know, I accidentally one time in a class, we made pressure cooker risotto and we made hand-stirred risotto, which you should never do because people only have the one thing that's in front of them, so they don't usually have a comparison. And there was a slight difference, and the stirred risotto may have been a little bit better. But when you just do it in the pressure cooker, you only have that one, and it's really delicious. And it's only 5 minutes, and no stirring. And it does come out creamy.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
And I make one with a winter squash and greens.
Winter
kale.
Squash risotto?
Yeah.
It's really good. Is really great.
It's really good, and it's really 5 minutes. And people are like, wow.
Five minutes.
I love it. I don't make risotto that often, but when I do, it's... It's just great to throw it in the pressure cooker.
Well, what do we know, if we do know, what has changed from that pressure cooker I was so afraid of when I was a little kid? How have they gotten better in the way of safety and handling?
Well, they have about, most of the current pressure cookers have about four different escape mechanisms for things to...
For the steam to come out.
Yeah, for things to not go wrong. And so they're much easier to work with. They've designed things like that little bobbin on the top.
So where you can press and release pressure if you need
to. Exactly. And they've designed those in such a way that you can get really clear about what level of pressure you want to build up. in the pressure cooker. So if you get to knowing a lot about your machine, I feel like it's a machine more than a pot.
It's definitely.
And you really
the pot.
Do have a lot of control over what happens. That's one of the things that's so much easier than it used to be.
How many pressure cookers do you have, Jill?
I hate to admit it. I was thinking of that this afternoon. I'm like, well, how many pressure cookers do I have? I definitely have more than eight.
I have
a lot. I don't use them all. I can't. But I do have a lot of them. But I want to go back to what's the difference. Mm-hmm. The old ones, and I have to say, I can top your mother's story because my mother's pressure cooker actually blew up.
Mm-hmm. And I think mine might have. I know that up above the stove, there was this spot on the ceiling.
Yes.
And I remember being told about it, but I wasn't there when it happened. I didn't witness it.
Yeah, I kind of just vaguely, you know, it's one of those things you don't really want to remember, but I used to be able to walk around the kitchen because I didn't, we had a two-way to go around. Mm-hmm. So I would never go in because I'd always hear ch-ch-ch-ch-ch and I'd be terrified. But the biggest difference now in the pressure cookers is they no longer, the new ones no longer have that jiggler on them. So they're all incorporated into one and they have a spring valve or a weight valve that usually pops up. Mm-hmm. So you don't have an extra piece like that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So
and
it
I never
can't.
Was really aware of the function of that extra piece.
That's really what causes it to have pressure. That's what
so is that what locks in?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So that the biggest issue and the reason that people have this thing about pressure cookers blowing up is because people wouldn't wait for the pressure to come down and want to take that off, and then the lid
that's
would
what
blow
would,
off
oh,
the pot.
Okay.
So the old pressure cookers, you had to run them underwater or wait for the pressure to come down, and the new ones have the pressure release valves so that you can release the pressure, or you can still take the big heavy pot over to the water.
Or you can just let it sit. With some things, you just let it sit.
Like beans.
And it comes down naturally.
Yeah.
Takes longer, but that's part of the cooking process, and
you
add that in.
Absolutely. But if you're cooking something like broccoli or carrots, you want it out of there fast.
And is that true with risotto as well? You want it out of there?
I quick release with the risotto, yeah. Because some things you really want to deal with that time issue and, like, you know, 15 seconds extra, not with risotto, but with broccoli, it goes from green to gray.
Sure.
So you got to do it really fast. So that's where that quick release comes in.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to how many pressure cookers I have, oh, my goodness. I just got a new pressure cooker sent to me, and it's called the Fissler. It is a very expensive pressure cooker. I took it out of the box. I was really busy. I didn't have a chance. I took it out of the box. It's so heavy. It's so beautiful. It's like a super Mercedes or something. But, you know, you wouldn't want to lift your Mercedes, and this is like that. It's really this heavy, heavy steel, and I think it's really beautiful, but so far I've not found it quite as functional as some of the less expensive cookers.
Yeah, what one do you use most often?
The one I use the most, I have two that I use the most. I use Faeger and I use Magafesa are the ones that I use the most. And I do have a Kuhn Recon, but I don't use that as often.
Yeah, the only one I have just a Kuhn Recon.
Yeah.
And I remember doing a little research when I started looking, okay, what's available? And that's what I ended up with, and so far I haven't had any reason to look elsewhere.
And those three, Kuhn Recon is Swiss, Fagor and Magfisa are both Spanish. Those are the three best, I think, on the market now. The old Prestos are still out there.
Presto?
Presto, Miro.
That sounds Presto might be what my mother has.
Yes,
that sounds
exactly.
pretty familiar.
Yeah. They have like a cookbook from 1946 or something that I have. But a lot of people have those. And, you know, there are a lot of people, I get a lot of people at my pressure cooking classes who do have the old-fashioned pressure cookers. And I tell them, if they are happy with them, use them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not touching one. because I'm really afraid.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's an unnatural fear. I think it's just that I'm used to the new ones. They work great. So why should I bother?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really. You know, people still do use them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's others that people use. One of the ones that people sometimes use are these electric ones, which have become very popular.
Oh, I don't even know about them.
Yeah, they're electric, and they come in all different forms. They actually have a Yahoo pressure cooking group for electric pressure cookers. And the interesting thing about that is that here's what I really think. I think that the people who use the electric pressure cookers just want to push a button and they want to walk away. And they're not nearly as concerned about how the food comes out as long as the food comes out. Hmm. And so it's more along the crock pot kind of thing, mm-hmm. you know, set it, forget it. Whereas if you use a stovetop pressure cooker, I think you're a little more interested in getting the quality at the other end.
Hmm. Interesting.
And you do have to think. Mm-hmm. And so I've been on this Yahoo group, and I say that some of them are Yahoos because I think a lot of the people really live like in the Midwest, maybe, because I've seen the things they talk about posting, and you know, they just have a different kind of thing with cooking.
Whole different relationship to
absolutely.
Food.
Absolutely. It's a cultural thing.
Mm-hmm. So. Now, you mentioned crock pots.
Yeah.
Now, crock pots seem, on one hand, to have some similarities with pressure cookers in that they seem like they might use less energy. Say you want to braise slow cook meat or something, mm-hmm. or slow cook, what did I just do? I just did something. Oh, I did a turkey barley soup. I thought, well, if you're braising something in the oven, you're using a lot of gas to fill, you know, to create heat in a fairly large space. So I got a crock pot to experiment. I thought it's something I should know about. So there's that. But on the other hand, a pressure cooker uses energy for a much briefer time.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Are there similarities between the two?
Well, here's what I mean, I've thought about this. I don't have a crock pot. But this is what I say. If you use a crock pot, if you can think at 8 a.m. what you're going to eat at 6 o'clock. You use a pressure cooker when you're going to make your meal at 5:15. And so I think that's the biggest difference. Hmm. It's like, I can't think at 8 o'clock, what am I eating for dinner? So I use the pressure cooker. Mm-hmm. But some people like to put it in and then have it ready when they get home. So I think it's a different way of thinking about mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to put it. I did it just because I'm very interested in very slow cooking for a variety of things. Mm-hmm. And I am utterly incapable of thinking at 8 in the morning what I might be doing at 2 in the afternoon, let alone at 8. And I've actually made soups that take me 3 or 4 days to make in a crock pot. So it's like, well, I think I'll do that now, and okay, I'll put it in the refrigerator. So it's just, I'm just playing. I'm just experimenting. And I don't know what my final opinion about a crock pot is going to be.
You know, I think the other difference with the crock pot, and I did used to have one, is the flavors in the crock pot, I think, tend to get muddled, whereas the flavors in the pressure cooker are very bright and crisp. And like when I make vegetable soup, every vegetable stays its own thing. And like,
even though you're cooking them all together
absolutely.
At the same time,
yeah. And I
now,
do.
What do you think that is?
Stages.
Do you think it's because the brevity?
I think it is. It infuses it, and it kind of like seals it and gives it a like. You know, a texture kind of thing that is just really, you're unable to get any other way.
Interesting.
And it's a shorter period of time.
Shorter period. Now, you said broccoli, for example. Now, I would never think, up until now, I would never think to take my pressure cooker out for broccoli because I'm going to steam broccoli in my little basket steamer on my walk mm-hmm. in less time than it takes for me to pull my pressure cooker out of the cupboard.
Well, I actually have timed it. And it actually takes less time to do in the pressure cooker. And the benefit is if I make broth in the pressure cooker, like mm-hmm. weekly, and I make vegetable broth, it takes 5 minutes at pressure. So I can make broth all the time. So what I'll do is I'll put my broccoli in, maybe with just now every cooker is different, but maybe a couple tablespoons of broth, just enough to get the pressure up. Do it for 1 minute or throw some seasoning in. It infuses the broccoli with something, and the flavor comes out much better than when it's just steamed.
Interesting.
So you have to try it and see.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I actually just wrote a blog post about that, uh-huh. you know, why I think steaming is not the way to go for most vegetables.
Hmm. So. You're listening to Mouthful on KRCB.
1, 2, 1, 2, 10, 12.
Ah, Under Pressure here on Mouthful. You know, there's a lot of ways to get involved with pressure cooking if you've never done it before. Lorna Sass is one of the people who's written a lot of books, Cooking Under Pressure, Great Vegetarian Cooking Under Pressure, The Pressured Cook, all by Lorna. And then there's Express Cooking, Barry Bluestein and Kevin Morrissey. The thing that one of these books, and oh, actually, I should also tell you, whenever you buy a pressure cooker, little cookbooks come with it. And what they're really good for is sort of, you know, not so much for exact recipes necessarily as really learning the technique. One of the ways to think about it is when you're doing something like this, it's like learning another language. You have to learn the whole grammar of a new thing. And so exposing yourself to what other people have done before you is really a good thing. You can also take classes on pressure cooking. Jill, what do you have classes coming up?
I actually don't have any coming up for quite some time, but I actually have a DVD that I did because I think it's a very visual thing, and people really need to see how to do it. And I have a website, which is called pressurecookingonline.com.
Okay, now you know how things go on Mouthful, so someone just said website. Get yourself a pen and pencil, and before Mouthful ends, Jill will repeat it.
So I have this website, and there's actually a clip on there that shows me using the pressure cooker so people can see how to do it. Mm-hmm. I also have some clips on YouTube so that people can see how the pressure cooker works. Because what I discovered was I wrote a chapter in my book on it, but people still didn't get it. And so they really have to see it in action before they really feel like, oh, I know how to do that, because there are all those terms. And what does it mean, natural pressure release? And what does it mean when it gets to pressure? And, you know, there is a lot that, I mean, it's simple once you learn it. But until you get there, you're like, oh, what's going to happen?
Yeah. And, you know, you really don't want to blow things up if you can avoid it.
I tell people the first thing you should put in your pot is water and turn it on, because that way you haven't ruined anything. Mm-hmm. And then you can see how your pot works.
Yeah. What can go wrong?
Idea.
What can go wrong?
Well, you know, there's only a few things that really can go wrong, because I have tried everything they say don't do. And one of the things, somebody just told me the other day, oh, I keep burning my pressure cooker. I'm making tomato sauce. Well, tomatoes have a lot of natural sugar. And in order to make the pressure cooker get to pressure, you have to turn the heat all the way to high. So anything that has a lot of sugar, like leeks or tomatoes, you can burn the bottom of your cooker. Mm-hmm. Or once I made split pea soup, and it wasn't quite done, and I stirred it, and all the split peas sank to the bottom, and I turned the heat up again, and so everything burned on the bottom. So that's one thing. What else? Sometimes there's things that bubble up, you know, and the pressure doesn't rise, or you didn't put the right amount of water in.
Or you can fill it too full.
The gasket.
Yes, and gaskets fail.
Oh, gaskets. Yeah. Gaskets
That's
fail.
That's what comes into the store.
And so
all the time.
People can get new gaskets from you?
Yes. Yeah. And that's usually what the stories that I hear around failed gaskets.
Now, how often does somebody come in to buy a new pressure cooker from you? Do you sell several a week?
No. I would say we sell 18, 20 a year.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. It's not a really big item.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But I think it's really growing. I actually do Google alerts for pressure cooking and pressure cookers, and I think it's exponentially increasing that people are saying, oh, I have a pressure cooker, and people are writing about how, you know, they're saving energy, they're saving time, they're making better food with pressure cookers. So I think it's, you know, it's coming, but people really do have a lot of fear around pressure cooking. Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing, and if you don't know the answer to this, it's okay. It's just something that occurs to me because of the way I think about it. It's like, well, it is like pressure has to do with atmospheric pressure. So if I have this right, what you're doing with a pressure cooker is you're increasing in a discrete environment, you're increasing the atmospheric pressure as you would, like I said, if you were going underground. So let's say you go to Aspen, or you go to Santa Fe or somewhere that's high altitude. Do pressure cookers function in the same way?
Yes, I believe they do.
So it's still that discrete environment.
Well, actually, I think what happens is a lot of people who live at higher altitudes buy them because they can't boil water otherwise.
Yeah, I would think it'd be a great thing for altitudes.
There is a ratio. I don't know what it is, but for every 1,000 feet, it takes so much longer.
Mm-hmm.
But pressure cookers do work that way, but they don't work quite as fast. But, you know, the big thing with pressure cooking is instead of boiling at 212, you're now boiling at, you're cooking at 250. So you get a huge heat increase, which is why it's so fast. So it's, you know, it's the lid on the pot mm-hmm. that makes it get hot.
Yeah, you're just creating this in, this environment that has more pressure per square inch or whatever
right.
you want to call it.
Yes.
Yeah.
You get 10 or 15 pounds per square inch. I don't know what that feels like, but.
So where do people get the DVD? Through your website, Jill?
They can get it through my website, and they can also get it. I just listed it on Amazon.
Oh.
So
good.
I think they can get it there.
Cool. And what pressure cookers do you carry, Louise?
I carry Megfisa. I have carried Fagor and Kuhn-Reikon,
uh-huh.
but at the moment I'm working with Megfisa.
Uh-huh. What does a pressure cooker cost?
About 120 usually uh-huh. for a 6 or 8 quart.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe our 6 quarts are down to 99.
Mm-hmm.
But that's roughly what we deal with. The Kuhn-Reikons are much more than that, usually run up 180,
mm-hmm.
190.
Now, is this something that you think of as a lifetime purchase? If you take good care of it?
I expect that to be the case.
Uh-huh.
I don't think most people need 8.
No, nobody needs 8. I mean, really, how many burners do you have? But I think that...
Yeah, well, if you're writing about it, you know, you want to test them all.
Oh, yeah. But I think most people do really well with 2. And it's because...
One larger, one smaller?
Well, it could be larger and smaller. That's fine. But, like, you can make curry in one and rice in the other.
Okay, so you're using 2 at once.
Yeah. So, I think 2 is really good. But you don't have to have 2. You could mm-hmm. do 1. They have these cool things that we don't have here, these divided inserts where I want to manufacture one, but I don't know how to do it, where you can cook more than one thing at the same time in your cooker. And Lorna has a book, I think it's called Pressure Perfect, where she does more than one thing. She layers it.
Uh-huh.
But this is in India, everybody uses a pressure cooker because they don't have a lot of fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And they have these inserts. They're stainless steel and they have different compartments in them. And you can put something in one and something in another and they don't interact with one another. Mm-hmm. I just think it's the coolest thing.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
Yeah. And I've tried to get online and purchase one, but I can't find it. So
interesting. Well, somebody should do that.
I haven't seen them on the market.
No, and I have inquired. So. Yeah.
Now, speaking of things on the market, we'll come back to pressure cookers before the end of the show because I want to talk about exactly, I want you to go through exactly how you use one. But I asked you, Louise, to bring some of the hot new things on the market.
Yes,
so
and I have brought them.
I want to know what you brought.
Okay. One of our favorite new items is a new kind of nonstick done by a company called Swiss Diamond that uses some diamonds in the...
I was just reading about this.
Yes, and they've been on the market maybe 2-3 years now. The wonderful thing about them is that you can, as with all nonsticks, you can cook without oils and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a regular cook who just really likes a nonstick... These will brown, other nonsticks don't brown.
No, the other, yeah.
Yeah.
They seem to repel.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Fats
somehow
don't behave properly.
Right.
Surfaces of foods don't behave properly.
Exactly. And so these are really much better and about the same price as really good quality other nonsticks.
Okay.
And
what's the name of the brand?
It's called Swiss Diamond.
Swiss Diamond.
And the other thing that's special about them is that they don't have any PFOAs. PFOAs are those little gases that are in some of the nonstick compounds that are used, okay? Most of them, Teflon, so on. And if you burn one of those up, PFOAs go into the atmosphere, and people often talk about there's enough bad stuff to kill a bird if you happen to have a bird.
Wow.
Well, and obviously that's not very good for your lungs either.
That just doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah. And so it, you know, that's been a real effort in that industry is mm-hmm. to come up with...
And the surface actually is industrial diamonds of some sort.
Yes, yeah. They are, you know, really.
Which are so hard.
Gritty, tiny.
Hard as one of the hardest substances.
Yes. and whatever compound they've got them in doesn't throw off those PFOAs should you happen to burn it up. Nonstick is perfectly safe if you don't burn it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a problem at all.
Okay. So what else?
Okay. Then another issue kind of big in food these days is what's going on with silicone.
It's certainly colorful.
Yes. They really do it in colorful ways. I've brought, this is a trivet.
And it's a sunflower on a blue background. And I've seen this in the store. McCoy, and we should say McCoy's Cookware.
Right.
On 4th Street, mm-hmm. next to Safeway, just exactly. before Farmer's Lane. Been there a long time now.
Yes, 22 years.
No. It hasn't been 22 years. Tell me, no.
Yes, it has, I'm afraid.
Wow. So this is gorgeous. This is I would like some fabric like this. I could sew with this.
And that's what's nice about being able to do, you know, these really, really pretty things in this very, very heat-resistant material. And it also won't scratch your tables and stuff like that, you know, and you can put hot pots on that. Fabulous. And for a long time, they've been using silicone in baking in Europe and commercially. But over the last 3 years, we've just had an explosion of this kind of bakeware. This particular piece I brought to show you is a Madeleine pan.
Yes.
And it's a perfect kind of device because they just pop out.
And
muffin pans.
And what about the way the food, the batter in these functions? Because, I mean, I've always assumed that one of the things that is happening, the metal, you know, the aluminum, whatever it is not just holding it, it's conveying heat. So
yes.
What's the difference?
Well, I think if you want really, really special crusts, I think silicone's maybe not such a great idea.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. When you want to just be able to get it out easily for unusual forms and so on and so forth, it can work really, really nicely for you.
Which leads me to ask, are they making silicone ice cube trays yet?
Yeah.
Okay, because I had a plastic ice cube tray in the shape of stars. Trying to get the ice out. It doesn't. The only way you can get the ice out is to melt it. Rather
and
frustrating.
And you lose the ice, right? And then I think another really good use of silicone is in things like basting brushes.
Oh, look at that one!
Part of what's wonderful about
looks like it's made of spaghetti. It looks like the basting part is made of spaghetti.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they can be so clean
and heat resistant.
And heat resistant.
It doesn't melt.
Right. Doesn't melt.
Cool.
And I think for a lot of people, we're always throwing out their basting brushes because they just felt like they were
disgusting.
Greasy, dirty.
Yeah, well, and plus the brushes start to disappear.
Yeah, that's true too. And then I don't know if you'd seen these.
Yeah, it's the little baby doll bathing caps. Or, you know, if you take your cat swimming, you want to get one of these to tie on its head. But they're for poached eggs, right?
They are for poached eggs. And they just are little cups that sit in simmering water. And then when you push them out, you have perfectly round, beautiful poached eggs.
There you go.
Just gorgeous. And these we sell lots and lots
really?
Of. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. People have tried them. They come back, buy them for friends. They're just
cool.
They make poached eggs easy.
But there's no water.
No.
Yeah,
no, so it floats on the water.
Right. And
so it's cooked in a different way.
Yeah, it's cooked in a different way.
You put a lid on it. Okay. It's floating in the water, and you put a lid on the pan, so the steam.
Okay. I have to experiment with that sometime, because I'm a real fan of putting the egg into the water. Like, I don't use those little metal poachers.
Right. Yeah. I'm like you.
Yeah.
The way I do it. But for a lot of people, that's messy. And these are very neat.
Oh, they're neat. Oh, yes, the neat factor.
And they like the fact that they get so perfectly, they come out so perfectly. So that, you know, if you're doing.
They just look, they really look like some sort of new age army helmet.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
Miniature.
Yeah, miniature army helmet.
And, you know, a lot of people are a little concerned about silicone because it feels like rubber. But it's not. Silicon is the same stuff that glass is made out of. But it feels like rubber.
It's pretty amazing the way
it is.
Yeah. It's so different.
Yeah, it's so different, yeah. And it takes a little bit of getting used to.
Yeah, it does.
In that kind of way.
Oh, you have some new peelers.
This one is
yes,
very cool.
I think one of the new, I mean, in the last couple years, things have happened to potato peelers.
Wow.
Usually they've just been ordinary potato peelers, but that one is serrated.
That's the peach peeler, right?
And
or
it's,
tomato.
And it's a wonderful for peaches, and you can peel a tomato.
Wow.
Easily.
Huh? Is that a Messermeister?
This one is Messermeister, yeah. But Xylus, a Swiss company, also does them. They're really good, too. And OXO does one, too.
I think I have an OXO.
Do you?
I
in the
serrated? I don't have a serrated. No, I don't think it's serrated.
Yeah. Well,
I have
OXO
one.
Does
and I just,
both.
Yeah. I
regular.
Think I have a non-serrated one.
Right. And the thing that this does, I mean, you can. I've gotten so I use it most of the time. It takes less of the skin off, like of a carrot
mm-hmm.
or
right.
a potato,
yeah.
okay? Because it grabs, because it's got all these little teeny tiny teeth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it grabs really easily. So I've gotten so I use the serrated one all mm-hmm. the time. But and then this is a ceramic blade. Peeler with
mm-hmm.
a ceramic blade, and these are very nicely sharp, very durable. The edge stays forever.
Nice.
And again, it's you have to learn how to use it because it takes a lighter touch than your old potato peeler.
Uh-huh.
My assistant hates that one. She hates it. She brings her own peeler when she helps me because she doesn't like that one.
Right. Because it takes getting doing it differently,
mm-hmm.
slightly. And my staff like it after they got used to it.
After they got, okay, interesting.
You know. And then the last one I brought is this is a little peeler that makes julienne strips.
Oh, nice.
That is a great peeler.
Yeah.
And,
cool.
It's just handy to, you know, put down a zucchini and just, you know, run that down it and get all those little tiny matchstick things for a
that's
quick
awesome.
Little...
I think people I know may get this for Christmas.
Yeah.
People love it.
Yeah, this is great.
It's very impressive, too, what you can do with it.
Uh-huh.
I've used it on daikon and carrots and all kinds of things.
Right.
And when you end up with all those cute little julienns, they're like, wow.
Excellent.
So anybody can use it.
Cool.
Okay.
And there's more to come.
There's a little bit more. With Thanksgiving on the way, I thought we should show you, I mean, what they're doing in probes and temperature, you know, for cooking your turkey. Fabulous. I mean, this thing will alert you when it's almost done, when it's done, and when it's overdone.
Overdone, go out to dinner. It'll make reservations for you if you overcook the turkey.
Right. And it has, you know, different ways of programming it, and you can spend quite a bit of time figuring out how to use it.
How to use it, yeah, I bet.
You know, because
it will do a lot of things. And you can forget
from year to year. It will do a lot of things for you. And then I wanted you to see the silly turkey baster. We've got a turkey baster here with
the pump
the
is
bulb
a turkey.
Is
the
in
bulb.
The shape of a turkey.
Turkey.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
And then, you know, these are wonderful corks for your olive oil bottle.
Olive oil, yes, absolutely.
Okay? Because they automatically open as you
close.
Tip the bottle.
That's wonderful.
And then as you set it back up, it automatically closes.
You know what else these are good for? If you like to put your dishwashing liquid in an attractive little jar rather
exactly.
than having, you know, an ugly bottle sitting around,
right.
put it in a little jar. This would be perfect.
Exactly. Because
cool.
you just tip it.
Yeah.
And things pour, and then it has a nice lid on it. And then, you know, we need extra servers often at holiday times. And I have these little butter servers that come in skins. I mean, the
mm-hmm.
designs
nice
of skins.
Nice little animal sort of.
Animal prints.
Animal
that's,
print.
That's the phrase.
Fit right into my
for.
House.
And I brought it for you.
Oh.
Because I know you like this
oh,
kind
well,
of
thank
your
you.
Clogs.
God, I don't have those anymore. I can't believe you remembered.
And then, you know, these are towels made out of bamboo.
Oh, the whole bamboo, yes.
And they're
bamboo
so fabric. Soft.
Really soft.
Really soft.
And they seem to maintain their softness through multiple washing.
And they do
washing.
Maintain their, yes, they do.
That's really nice.
Time after time. And there's just a whole lot of things coming out. Mm-hmm. I think we'll see more
bamboo.
In bamboo.
Yeah.
Of course, we've seen a lot of cutting boards and bamboo.
I have socks. I have black pants and a T-shirt
yes.
that I wear practically every day.
And these microfiber things, these are also great for cleaning and stuff like that. And
they
have a
odd, they're very dense.
They feel dense odd, but they clean things without using any cleaning fluids and stuff like that.
Wow.
So that works out nice.
A world of toys for your kitchen and materials we never saw, God, not even 10 years ago. You're listening to Mouthful. Yep, it's mouthful. Time flies when you're having a good time. So we're going to go back to pressure cookers. And in a way, we've been talking about them as if everyone knew what you did with a pressure cooker. You just want to, you know, you want to make sure it doesn't explode. You want to release the pressure right. But what are the basic principles? I mean, I know that one of them that's really important is you have to have enough liquid, but also not too much. So let's talk in that arena.
Well, you know, somebody asked me this. I just taught pressure cooking on Thursday night, and someone said, well, how do you know how much liquid to put in? And it's really interesting. It's not like when you're making rice, you know, you put in 2 cups to 1 cup of rice mm-hmm. for most things. Like, you can do grains like that, but a lot of it depends on the size of the pot. Mm-hmm. So I can cook 1 cup of rice in a 10-quart cooker, which is a huge cooker, but it's not very efficient, and it takes a little more liquid to boil and for the steam to get to the top. Mm-hmm. So it really does depend on your cooker, too, like your brand of cooker, because every brand will recommend a different amount. And so there is a little bit of experimentation you have to do. But in general, the big question people have is, how much liquid do I need to reduce from my regular recipe? And so you use less liquid in a pressure cooker because you don't lose any. Mm-hmm. So depending on the recipe and what you're doing, I like the minimal amount of liquid because I don't – if I'm like doing broccoli or uh-huh. I'm doing some, you know, easy braise with potatoes, I don't want a lot of liquid left over. So I may only use, you know, 2 to 3 to 4 tablespoons, which the manufacturer –
really
not tell
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that's really not much.
Yeah, no, it's not much. And it really depends what the ingredients are. Mm-hmm. So,
because now I would say with beans, especially one of the things you can do with beans, it's a lifesaver if you forgot to soak the beans. But now beans absorb a lot, so I think you need to use...
Beans are different.
Yeah.
So I actually almost always pre-soak my beans mm-hmm. because I like the way they come out a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But even then, if they are pre-soaked, when they go into the cooker, I only use a half a cup of liquid per 1 cup of soaked beans because they don't really need much more than that. And like on the stovetop, you want to cover them with mm-hmm. liquid.
Plus about 2 inches usually.
Right. In the pressure cooker, you do not need to cover your food with liquid.
Interesting.
So if you do the same thing you do not in the pressure cooker, you end up with this really watery, not very good stuff. Unless you're making soup mm-hmm. Or stew or something like that. But really, it's less liquid than you think. So Lorna has great charts in her books mm-hmm. about, you know, how to do it. And I mean, she really was my mentor.
Mm-hmm.
So I recommend that people look at something like that. Now, there is a book called Miss Vicky's Big Book of Pressure Cooking. I've not actually ever seen the book, but I don't care for her stuff. She probably has the most pressure cooking recipes
the most,
online.
You don't care for her recipes?
Well, I haven't seen that many of her recipes, but the charts uh-huh. all seem a little bit off to me.
Uh-huh. When was it written, do you know?
Just recently.
Oh, recently.
It just came out, I think, at the beginning of this year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, but it's a big book. Like, Lorna's books are a little more focused, and mm-hmm. hers was just like 400 recipes, but, you know, they're... I think sometimes the more recipes you have, it's not better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, yeah, that's can definitely be the case. So you probably get a bigger advance if you give them more recipes.
I think another thing that you have to pay attention to when you're cooking in a pressure cooker is the amount that you put in it. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yes.
in a 6-quart pressure cooker, you...
You could only fill it half to 2/3 full, yeah, depending yeah. on what you're doing.
Because you don't want it, if it bubbles
it
up
space.
And then the stuff starts coming out, the... the little thing on top that lets the steam escape.
It's not even that. You need a certain amount of space to create pressure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, like, on my DVD, I was using a little 4-quart cooker, and I made soup. And I looked in there after I had made it when I opened it up, and I was like, that is the most full you would ever want to see a pressure cooker. I mean, there was, like, you know, 2 inches, mm-hmm. and I don't even really know how I made it. But it's not safe, and it's not good, but... That leads to, like, what size pressure cooker do people need?
Mm-hmm.
And they come in 4, 6, 8, 10 is usually the biggest. Mm-hmm. There is one you can get a 12. But 10 is for, like, big, big batches of things. Mm-hmm. But the best sizes for most people are 6-quart or 8-quart. Mm-hmm. Because you can make 1 cup of rice in any cooker. But you can't do more than half to 2/3 in any cooker either. Mm-hmm. So, and usually if you're going to bother using the pressure cooker, make more, you know, make more beans and freeze them, make more stew, make more soup, make more pot roast, make more whatever you're making. It's the benefit of having it on and having it go fast.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a great thing if you have a freezer, especially I find with soups.
Yeah.
Make soup. Because one thing, I mean, flu season, it's really nice to have little freezer bags full of soup, the homemade soup, so
Absolutely.
That if you do get sick, you can just pull those out.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes. Nothing like chicken soup.
And you know, you mentioned the microwave, and what I have found is reheating in the pressure cooker, if you've made soup,
mm-hmm.
is really fast, and it's really hot, unlike the microwave where there's a lot of variation in the temperature.
Yes, you have to stir it up in order to, yeah.
Yeah, so you can just put it back in the pressure cooker, bring it to pressure for, like, you know, 30 seconds, and then quick release it, and then you have really hot soup.
Interesting.
Yeah. I just did it the other day for the first time.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I have chosen to be microwave illiterate. I don't like what microwaves do. I never did. And so I thought, well, I'm not going to learn anything more about this. And
don't really cook.
I don't think you've missed anything.
I think you can. I can tell if I make a cup of tea, and, you know, there's one in various places where I've been, heating water for tea in a microwave, that tea tastes different. Than if you cook, than if you heat the water in a teacup. I can tell the difference. There's a qualitative difference in your mouth.
Well, the water's not really boiled. I mean, the
right.
way that it is on the
no.
stove.
Yeah.
There's just something that's
yeah.
off. So,
yeah.
And I was talking to John Ash a couple of weeks ago, and we had lunch together. I was interviewing him for a story that's coming out in a month or so. And he was saying he's noticed that in cookware stores and things, you don't see microwaves anymore. And I had noticed, he says, it's hard to see a microwave. What you are seeing is toaster ovens.
Yes.
Is it time to do a show on toaster
yes.
ovens?
Probably.
Yeah, what's the deal? We got a couple minutes left. What's the deal with that?
I have a great convection toaster oven.
I saw one recently, a convection toaster oven. They're very tiny.
Great.
I assume you have something where, again, you're using less, you're heating a smaller space.
Absolutely.
So if you're making... A grilled cheese sandwich, you have to heat a much smaller place, therefore you're using less energy.
Right.
Is that what a lot of the appeal is?
Well, I think that's part of it. I also would suggest that microwaves are getting built into a lot of people's kitchens these days.
Oh,
you know, it kind of comes with the oven and the
Not being someone who's done that sort of thing, yeah, I wouldn't know. Right. I probably should.
So I think microwaves are really still out there.
Oh, really?
I mean, most people are using them quite a bit. Yeah. But I find toaster ovens so wonderful, and it's such a much better, I mean, you know, microwave baked potatoes are horrible, and
they do really terrible.
Toaster ovens, you get them almost as quickly, and they're really tasty.
Microwaves do terrible things to tortillas.
Oh,
they make tortillas
like
gummy. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. They make them all, stick together oddly.
Is it true that plants will not grow if watered with microwaved water? Lawrence is just showing me this. I don't know, Lawrence, is it true? You can Google that and let me know if you would like. You can be sure tonight I will be reading that. So we've got just like a minute or two. Jill, your website, how people find your DVD, how people find you.
My website, I have two websites. One is theveggiequeen.com, and the other one is where they'll see the video clip is pressurecookingonline.com.
Okay, now Veggie Queen, people are always confused. Is there one G or two Gs?
There's two Gs, and it's theveggiequeen.com. And people can email me directly at jill@theveggiequeen.com.
And then the other one is pressurecookingonline.com.
Okay. Yes.
And aren't you doing a pressure cooking book, too?
I am working on it very slowly, Louise, very slowly. It's what happened was I ended up with 20 recipe testers, and that's a project in itself.
Oh, yeah, 20 recipe testers. Whoa. Oh, yes. That's a big project.
So it's kind of just like stop me for a minute or week.
Yeah.
Okay. And McCoy's Cookware, what's the exact address?
We're at 2759 4th Street. We're next to Pearson's, between Pearson's and Safeway.
And the credit union.
And the nearest cross street is Farmer's Lane.
Yes. And if you need to buy cookware, you won't do any better than going to McCoy's. And when you do, you're supporting a local business, a real person. And that has never been more important. And it has always been the most pleasurable way to shop. So meet me back here next week on Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. Thanks to both of you for being here. Thanks to Kainoa Raymond for producing and Lawrence Alberti for engineering. See you all next week.
Support for Mouthful on KRCB comes from our members and from NetBooks, complete business management software for companies up to 50 people, including wineries and food producers. Information available at netbooks.com or by phone at 86-NETBOOKS. And from Traverso's Gourmet Foods and Wine, a family-owned purveyor serving customers for over 85 years with domestic and imported edibles and beverages in an old-world atmosphere in downtown Santa Rosa and online at traversos.com. We also have support from Peter Lowell's Cafe in Sebastopol, offering casual dining in the rustic Italian tradition, featuring seasonally sourced organic produce, serving brunch Saturday and Sunday with a farm prefix menu Sunday evening. Peter Lowell's Cafe, online at peterlowells.com. Come on, babe, now listen to what the preacher says.